Lecture 18, Food and Drink.
In the last lecture, we discussed Mesopotamian cities and the evidence for them that exists in the second millennium BC. And I warned you that I was drawing from sites all over Mesopotamia and combining evidence from a lot of different time periods within the second millennium to create that picture of what city life was like. In today's lecture, Mesopotamian food and drink, I'll be doing the same thing, only I will be drawing from an even broader time period, basically from prehistory down to the end of our course, to try and give a sense of what types of food and drink were enjoyed by Mesopotamians. This would have been a consistent diet that they maintained throughout the entire period of history that we're discussing, and so it makes sense to draw on as much different evidence as possible. When we discuss food and drink, we use representations of food and drink in art. We also look at archaeological evidence and scattered written references to feasts that might be sponsored by temples, perhaps by rulers, and sometimes even poetry can give us an idea of what foods were especially exotic or tasty. The written evidence also comes from ration lists and accounts of royal banquets, and there's one text that's especially important for providing a sense of the different types of food that were available. This is an ancient dictionary of Akkadian and Sumerian terms for different foods. And on each, there's a row of Akkadian terms and the corresponding row of Sumerian terms. So when I say something like we have X number of terms for bread or beer, you'll know that it comes from this one particular dictionary. Many references to rations or even the types of food eaten and distributed survive, but only a few recipes are known. So our knowledge about Mesopotamian meals is somewhat hindered, and we have to use our imagination to think about how a cook would combine the different raw ingredients to create a good meal. Certainly the rich environment of Mesopotamia supplied a diverse diet for the inhabitants of the region. We talked about how grains, nuts, fruits, and vegetables were domesticated in the prehistoric period, and they were fully domesticated by the end of the third millennium BC. Barley and emmer wheat were the most readily available grains, and barley often appears in lists of food collected and distributed. It was one of the most common types of grains. Chickpeas were also especially desired, and they are a good source of protein. I add them to stews, and I'm sure that this was a common use for them in antiquity as well. Domesticated animals could provide beef, pork, lamb, and goat, but we know from other sources that the animals were really too valuable to be used for meat on a regular basis, and it was probably much more common to hunt wild animals to provide meat for the table. Rabbits, gazelles, many different types of birds and fish were plentiful from the areas around the rivers and in the marshes, and even artificial ponds would be stocked with fish when necessary to help supply food for the city. Another, perhaps less widely used, source of protein today would be locusts. One letter to a king reports that there had been a plague of locusts, which on the one hand decimated some of the crops, but did in themselves provide food when they were fried for dinner. Eggs, too, could supply protein, and over 150,000 eggs and 50,000 birds were collected in a 2.5-year period by Shulgi. And remember that the Ur III kings required a tax of different resources from different regions of the kingdom, and so this particular region supplied birds and eggs that the crown would then either use in the palace household or even distribute at a banquet or to other regions.